Welcome to Sharp Waves, a podcast from the International League Against Epilepsy. Our episodes cover epilepsy research, clinical care, career development, and issues in diagnosis and treatment from around the globe.
Thank you for joining one of our episodes of Sharp Waves. It's delightful to have Professor Philippe Ravelin join us from Lausanne. I was just going to start by asking you to introduce yourself. You're very well known in the epilepsy field, but just for our audience, and tell us a little bit about your expertise.
Well, to summarize my career, I'm primarily a physician and neurologist, but very early on in my career, I started being interested in epilepsy, and that has been my main field of work, of clinical work and research, for the last 35 years. I've been working primarily in France until 2015, where I decided to move to Lausanne. And the primary reason was that I wanted to be very close to an area that is extremely well known, has a strong reputation in technology and neurotechnology, and this is the Polytechnic School of Lausanne. And the Polytechnic School of Lausanne worked very closely with the University Hospital of Lausanne, and actually those are the two institutions which originally created the Human Brain Project a little bit more than 10 years ago.
Oh, wonderful. Can you then, I think that's a great segue to just letting us know a little bit. Can you walk us through the briefly about the Human Brain Project and how it evolved to include patients with epilepsy and different epilepsy projects?
So HBP was one of the two flagship that Europe has decided to fund in 2013. That was supposed to be $1 billion project. In reality, it has been a little less, and it proved to be a very challenging project. And a reason why this framework has not been replicated by the European Commission. Originally, it was aiming at creating a digital brain, to put it simple. I think eventually that's not what it produced for a number of reasons, and there has been a political turmoil early on. And when I arrived in Lausanne and took over some role in HBP, in the clinical research in HBP, which is a very minor portion of the project, things were already completely reformatted into a project that I would say primarily focuses on digital neuroscience. Let's put it that way. That is, developing tools and research based on those tools that are primarily digital. And that include, for instance, the so-called virtual brain that has been developed by Victor Jussa from Marseille, which is a complex connectomic model. There's many other being developed and used in epilepsy at the moment, but this one is clearly one of the most sophisticated. But that include also neuro-robotic, developing a platform for helping the advances in the field of neuro-robotic. There was also neuromorphic computing, which aims at creating chips for computer, which organization will more resemble an assembly of neurons than a classical chip. You know, all those kind of things. But myself, I was involved in more trivial activity, which are really about data sharing. And it's interesting because eventually that proved, I think, more and more relevant to what is happening in the field of medicine, in the field of neurology, if we think of the role of AI, if we think of the role of large language model. Definitely big data is an essential part of it. And big data start by organizing and facilitating data sharing. So that was our main objective in what we developed in the Human Brain Project.
Right. Can you now tell us about how, in addition to the virtual epilepsy brain, this how the HIP, for short, has now gained a different perspective, and how I guess it could complement or add to the virtual epilepsy project within the eBrains platform?
So it's truly complementary, because the HIP, the Human Intracerebral EEG platform, is really a platform for data sharing. Upon which then, as I will explain, you can use a number of tools like the virtual brain, which can be run on what we call SEG data on the hip. So it's different but complementary. Mm-hmm. Importantly, the hip was developed very late in HPP. So when I arrived in HPP in 2017, I took over the activity that were launched by others. But then when we get to the last stage, the last 3 years, I proposed to build the HIP. The whole idea is, first of all, to acknowledge that intracerebral EEG is a unique set of data on the human brain function, really a unique window on how the human brain is operating, because we record directly from a neuronal assembly in human being, and there's almost no other such situation. Of course, we do it not for research, we do it for clinical purpose, but this offers this unique opportunity, and that has been acknowledged for decades. There's nothing new about it. However, what happened is that most centers will perform SEG in a limited number of patients every year. I will say, in an average, between 10 and 15%. There's a few centers, there's one center in China that can perform up to 100 per year, and there's a few centers in Europe that perform 30, 35 per year, but the average is between 10 and 15. Very importantly, the region of the brain that are being sampled are different between patients, dramatically different. And in each patient, you sample actually 0.5% of the total gray matter, cortical gray matter. So you immediately understand that if you want to make progress in human brain function using SEG, you will need to collect data from many, many patients, numbers that cannot be organized at a center level. I will say even at a national level if you are ambitious. And that's what the premise of setting the human intracerebral EEG platform, that is offering a solution that will encourage, help SEG center around the world sharing more data. We have about 150 SEG centers in the world, approximately. That means possibly between 1,500 to 2,000 patients undergoing SEG every year. If we could get together half of this information, we will definitely make huge progress. But it's not just a question of having the technology. It's a question of finding a way to motivate people and addressing all the issues that I will say are more and more complex when it comes to sensitive health data sharing and export. So that's a big part of the concept of the HIP. It's not just having a platform, but it's making that platform a success.
How does it differ to other platforms? Because there are some that already exist. Again, not at this magnitude, but I understand your vision for this platform is different, and what you are offering as part of it is different, including protocols, including software expertise.
It's different because most of what exists can be described as repository. And repository of public data are fine. It's a way to promote open science and advance in medical research, definitely. But what we offer is different indeed, and try to be more ambitious. So first of all, the concept of the platform is a so-called cloud-based trusted research environment. What does it mean? It means that if you participate to the project, you can upload your data on the platform, and then you can work on your data and the data of others, if they decide to share it with you, having access to the state-of-the-art methodologies, software, pipelines, to take the best out of your data. So that's a very different concept than a repository where people will go and download data of interest. And that's a way to motivate people to participate. You know, you tell them, well, you You don't necessarily need to get on your computer all the state-of-the-art tools to understand how to make them work, to ensure the appropriate upgrade of all the software, because we do that on the central platform. It will always be state-of-the-art on the platform. So that will facilitate your work. That's number one. Number two, of course, it's promoting data sharing. Promoting data sharing, but still protecting the value of each center data. And how we do that? We do that by having both private space and collaborative space. Private space means you're from a hospital in Detroit and you want to upload your data, but you don't want to share them at the moment. Well, you upload them in your private space. You can do whatever you want on your data, curation, post-processing, analysis, with all those state-of-the-art tools that I mentioned, but you're the only one having access to the data. Then you want to collaborate with other centers. So first of all, the platform offer communication tool so that project can be shared in the community. And then, depending on the type of project, you might invite 5, 10, 20, 50 center to join the project. And then you have a collaborative space where Zeus partner and only Zeus partner have access to the data, mm-hmm. where they can share whatever they want to share. You do not necessarily have to share all the data you upload in your private space, maybe only part of it, whatever. And we believe that really this is the essence of the platform, promoting new collaborative projects that can be run on the platform. There are a few other tools that are worthwhile mentioning. For some clinical EEG software used for SEG recording, and some of those are very largely used in Europe in particular, but not only in Europe, what we have organized is that you can upload your data on the platform from your clinical software using the copy-paste function that we're using every day when, you know, we want to archive our recording after curation. That means that make uploading extremely easy.
The data that's being collected is mostly neurophysiology, correct?
Yes, it's intracerebral EEG recording. But for interpreting those recordings, you also need to know exactly where the electrodes are placed within the patient brain. So right. You also need to associate neuroimaging. And mm-hmm. part of the state-of-the-art tools that are implemented in the platform include pipelines to make very fine localization of your electrodes on the patient individual brain. So we do also have neuroimaging data. And the data format we use for SEG data is a so-called BIDS SEG, and that format can also include some clinical information.
I mean, there are enormous benefits, like you have been alluding to, that can be gained from optimizing usage of big data platforms such as HIP, such as implementing of artificial intelligence and machine learning, precision medicine, and, you know, generalizability of the data. So with that, I wanted to know, what are the challenges, both from a data acquisition perspective and end user perspective, that you have come across?
It's very clear that the main challenge today in health data sharing is contract between institutions. I don't think it is about the concept of sharing data for the physician who collected, because I think we all understand that we can only gain by sharing data if you can protect your own, I would say, intellectual property, which right. is what we offer with the HIP. But the main problem is all the legal error at our institution, at least in Europe. I don't know in the US. But in Europe, what has happened is that lawyers have took more and more responsibility in hospital, and with often limited knowledge of what exactly we're doing, and also with limited resources. To give you an example, it's extremely frequent that one of the contracts I need for sharing data with another hospital will sit 6 months on the desk of our legal department. So you can imagine when in our case, we're dealing with contract with tens of different institutions. And the problem is the same in the other institution. So that's the main challenge. That's the main challenge. It's purely legal.
And I can attest to that. So working in the North American Center, that it becomes issue of privacy, which is probably sitting at the heart of this, but these are anonymized data, like you had
mentioned. Well, on the medical informatic platform, we only use anonymized data. Mm-hmm. On the human intracerebral EEG platform, it's supposed to be primarily pseudonymized data. But the lookup table that allows to know who is who, of course, stay in the hospital. It's not put on the platform. So on the platform, you could argue that the data are anonymized. But that also meant that we only accept on the HIP data that has been collected from patients who have to provide their informed consent.
So this really bears importance in allowing the scientific community to understand epilepsy and its complex interplay, really, what you're saying, above and beyond your single patient that's in front of you. So how far do you think we are from integrating this neurotechnology into the clinical workflow? And whether there needs to be studies like the clinical trial that's being done in Marseille, or whether those need to be implemented before they can be implemented into the workforce.
The 2024 eForum series from ILAE starts June 10th with a session on outcomes beyond seizures in the childhood onset epilepsies. The eForum features several experts examining the topic in detail, with live Q&A sessions and key learning points. Registrants also get access to relevant research papers and a self-paced virtual course to consolidate their learning. Visit ilae.org/congresses and click on the webinar tab to see more information and register.
I think here it's very important to distinguish the two main type of research that can be done on the HIP. Mm-hmm. One type is epilepsy directed and aim at identifying new biomarkers
right.
that can have immediate impact on the management of patients. I'll give you a few examples. The other is human brain function at large, which could in the future also have an impact on how we care of our patient, but it really starts by simply better understanding the brain through performing different type of tests while the patient is being implanted and recording how his brain responds, the different region of his brain responds to a language task, a memory task, a social cognition task, and so forth. So that's really two different fields, both of which can massively benefit from big data, and currently suffer from not having access to big data. So coming back to your question, I will concentrate on the first part, the epilepsy research. High frequency oscillation. It's been about 15 years that our community is hoping that HFO will prove to be a more reliable biomarker of the epileptogenic zone to guide epilepsy surgery and have better surgical outcome than using the current test. And many uncontrolled retrospective data suggest that it could be the case. Yet, there has been one randomized controlled trial performed in the Netherlands, and that was published last year in the Lancet Neurology, and that was negative. The fact is that trial faced a number of challenges, so its conclusion is not definitive. But it really showed that if we want to move forward in a field where there's a lot of need to still improve epilepsy surgery, we need to amass more data. Mm-hmm. Another example, we discussed rapidly the virtual brain. So the virtual brain can be run on HIP. At the moment, there is a clinical trial that does not use HIP that is being run in France. Actually, it's over. They have been recruiting 400 patients randomized into using or not the TVB prior to epilepsy surgery decision. And the goal is to demonstrate that if you perform that complex connectivity model, you get some information that helps you better delineate the epileptogenic zone and offer more chance of postoperative seizure freedom. We don't know whether that will be the case. I'm hoping it will be, but we don't know yet. Mm-hmm. But imagine that this is the case, or even if it's not, I think it will be interesting to continue in parallel being able to address this question or related question, like, is this model better than other connectomes that are currently available on data that will be shared on the HIP? So, you know, those are two, I would say, simple example of existing biomarkers whereby we still really miss a clear-cut answer and guideline as to whether we can improve epilepsy surgery using those biomarkers.
And how much technical and scientific knowledge is required on our end, on the end user's end, to be able to engage with this platform, essentially?
Well, I think the platform is made to enable all those who work in the field perform some activity with the expertise, the knowledge, and the tools they already master. Most of the data analytical software that are available on the platform are well known by many of the researchers in the field, whether we're talking about Brainstorm, about for the imaging 3D slicer, FreeSurfer. So when we have a number of other tools, but just to cite some of them and illustrate that people who will engage in the project will see that they can use the same tool that they have on their computer. Maybe they will be keen at discovering other tools that they don't have and that they believe will be useful for them. And here, I assume they will benefit from some tutorial. But you don't have to be a very sophisticated data scientist to get your hand on the platform.
It's essentially, one part is uploading the data and the other part is understanding the results. And from what I understand, and I haven't tried this myself, but this is meant to benefit everyone with different data science backgrounds.
Yes, absolutely. And hopefully it will also bring the field to an organization of research that will more resemble classic clinical research like clinical trial or big cohort study, where the essence of collaboration is that many, many stakeholders contribute to data sharing. And eventually one biostatistician performs the analysis. But this person that performed the analysis will not necessarily have a leading role in the project, because there's also a great value for all those who contribute to data, for those who propose the ideas. And so it could be a way maybe to move apart from a situation that we often encounter in SEG, where if you're not a sophisticated data scientist, you feel you cannot do anything, then give your data away.
I've been 5 years out of my training, and I feel like this is completely a new world. A world of neurotechnology has taken the epilepsy field by storm. And this has been an interest of mine. So I try to always, seek it out. But I wonder, how can an average epileptologist, I mean, average meaning a clinical epileptologist, become more proficient in this technology? And I would say a new language that's sort of bringing, it's a new addition to our clinical practice now. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
No, I agree this is a challenge. But on the other hand, a majority of SCG centers are interested in performing SCG-based research. We have done some survey. And so, when people get interested in the SCG, they can hardly escape getting involved in research. So I think there is an incentive. In most centers performing SEEG. Again, to participate to a project on the hip does not require that you master a lot of new technology. But what it requires is that you understand the principle of how it works and give a little of your resources and energy to participate to this joint effort. I think that's the main challenge. And, the most important thing when you start sharing SEG data is first having an excellent curation. If it's about seizure, when seizures start, when seizures stop. It's about the localization of your electrode, being able to really capture the exact position in the different anatomical structure. And if it's about a cognitive test, anyway, you need to perform the cognitive test in your center, then you share the data. But overall, I think 90% of the work has to be done by the clinical person in the SCG center. And,
right.
and only 5% in the end that will lead to the final result.
I guess all of this is probably perfectly aligned with ILAE's new neurotechnology section. At the heart of it is that we bring the clinical side at presence of at the, all of these advances.
Yeah, I think we really need to be on board, and we can praise the ILAE to have launched this initiative. It's very recent. We still have to see what it will deliver, but I think it's a very important one. The field is moving so fast in medicine in general with AI. If we're not in now, we'll be out forever.
that's a very good quote to perhaps conclude our discussion today. You're right. If we're not in it now, we may always be left out. I really hope this serves as a sort of an impetus for everybody who's curious about the field to learn more about this big initiative. We will include some of the websites and the links attached to this podcast so everybody can gain information. And I do understand that there's also some dedicated expertise and support. So if anybody needed to learn more about how to work around this platform, that they can get in contact with, correct?
Absolutely. And everything's free also. I'm looking forward to having a number of colleagues that will get in touch with us for participating to this great project.
Thanks for listening to Sharp Waves. Our content is meant for informational purposes only and not as medical or clinical advice. The International League Against Epilepsy is the world's preeminent association of health professionals and scientists working toward a world where no person's life is limited by epilepsy. Find more Sharp Waves episodes wherever you get your podcasts or at ilae.org.